Welcome to Thursday Night Mission. Come in out of the storm. Make yourself at home. You're on safe shore here in San Rafael, California, broadcasting to you live from the radio station of Dominican, Penguin Radio, here at radio.dominican.edu. I am Beacon, your host. My mission tonight is to honor our community. This week, my bearing is set on a high trajectory. I have a longitude drawn across California. The line describes our old redwoods and the fight to keep them alive. My latitude is set on a wondrous love for Mother Nature. Beacon Spotlight tonight is on Chris, a Marin resident who's dedicated years of his life to saving our fellow spirits, the trees. The light illuminates his life as an arboreal dweller, and the lamp shines brightly on the political activism he was a part of in the struggle against bad logging practices. Let me shutter the windows and close the door. Come sit down in the warmth with me here on Thursday Night Mission. In the next hour, before I send you out into the storm, I've got some readings for you tonight. Another one from Instruction from the Cook. I'll make you some announcements, as I usually do. Then I'm going to get into an interview with Chris and his time in our community. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. How are you doing?
You pull on in closer to the microphone here, okay, so I can hear you. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for coming up.
Thank you.
I'm going to have a fun time interviewing you about your times. First, we'll talk a little bit about you.
Okay.
And I wanted to talk about some of the things you came involved with that landed you so high up in a tree. And then in the second part of the hour, I want to talk a little bit about what life is like up in the trees so that
sure.
our audience gets an idea just what you've seen.
Yep.
I've also got my calendar coming in about half past the hour with some local shows from local artists. And I'll have some more announcements and a reading from you to tie up the show from Indian Spirit, which I believe I read when Gypsy was on.
Right on.
To start the show.
Hello, Gypsy.
Hello, Gypsy. Thank you for coming on the show. And it's great to have you on the show here, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Grant.
So Thursday Night Mission is 9 to 10 p.m. every Thursday night. And we sometimes start a little bit late, translistening over from the other DJ, so we're in a few minutes after. So we'll go over if we find something really that we want to yak about for a bit.
Sure. Sounds good to me. I'm here. I'm open. Anything you want to talk about?
All right. Well, we'll try to keep it clean.
Right. And, we'll focus on the trees.
Talking politics, that'll be a little bit of a stretch.
Right.
So we've only got an hour for a summary.
Oh, gosh, man, not that subject. Politics and religion, jeez.
But we all really are politics, aren't we? I mean, it's us.
Well, it is definitely a part of us. It's part of everybody. Politics, like, I definitely, like, don't, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of, truthfully, like, I would vote, like, for presidents and stuff like that, like, but I truthfully, like, I haven't ever voted in my life. That probably sucks to some people, but I don't know.
Well, we could get deep into the democracy.
We could, and I don't want to go there. It's like he threw me in the hot pan, like, oh.
There's so much to talk about. We wouldn't get it done.
There's a lot of things out in the world to talk about. Politics is definitely the tangly web, I guess. I don't know how to say it. I could talk about other things besides politics that are beautiful. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, things are going good. Like,
but there's things to be done.
There's a lot of things to be done. Yeah.
So we'll get into another 10, 15 minutes or so. We'll get into some of the politics behind your activism.
Sure.
And you had mentioned politics and religion.
Yes.
There's something else I wanted to add to that list, which was philosophy. This helps us understand both, I think. And I read last week from this book, Instructions to the Cook. It's titled Zen Master's Lessons in Living a Life That Matters.
Nice.
This is coming from a practicing Zen Buddhist.
Right.
And without getting into the complete book, which is a wonderful read, by the way, by Bernard Glassman and Rick Fields. about their bakery and how they set up a community project. It's got a lot of standalone readings. I'd like
bakery,
to read
bakery like they're
yeah yeah they make a bakery.
Wow.
And you know, they get people off the streets and give them jobs.
Oh wow. That's good.
It's a good book. I got this Centerfield Library.
Right.
Check it out. I'm going to turn it back in this week.
Okay.
This one on page 145 is called Make Your Home Your Temple. I really like the idea here, especially when we talk later about your life.
Right.
In a home that is, let's say, not normal
living. Not normal,
living.
Right. totally not normal living in a redwood. But so, I had to do it.
Here he writes these paragraphs for us. Make your home your temple. A few years ago, the Dalai Lama, a Buddhist monk who is both the spiritual and temporal head of Tibet, met with a group of rabbis in New Jersey. The Dalai Lama asked the rabbis how the Jews kept their religion and culture alive during the 2,000 years that they'd been in exile from their homeland. The Tibetans had been in exile from their country for 30 years, he said, and he was concerned about the future of their religion. One of the participants, Blue Greenberg, told the Dalai Lama that the Jews had kept the religion alive because of an ingenious thought the rabbis had had after the temple was destroyed. The rabbis had said that each home should be a temple, so they ritualized the Sabbath. The candles were laid out in a certain way on a tablecloth, and the whole meal became the offering. Traditionally, the candles are lit in a certain way, then the meal begins with a ritual washing of the hands. There's a blessing over the bread and wine, and the Sabbath meal becomes a communion every week. The diaspora didn't destroy the tradition because the family carried it on. Most important, the children were also involved in it. The Dalai Lama thought that was very interesting because, he said, when our kids come to the monastery, they usually fall asleep.
That's blissful, though.
I love the Dalai Lama's words. I've read for him before.
He's cool, actually. I like the Dalai Lama, actually. I have nothing wrong to say about that man. He's totally peace, love, and like full of light, that's for sure. So the people of Tibet, definitely much love to Tibet, for sure.
They've suffered a lot in the past few decades.
From what I've heard, like, being ran out of their land, like, I know a little bit of it. Like, if it's too harsh, I won't go too deep into it. Like, just knowing that they were pushed out of their own land is enough to know, like, you know, for someone to do that, that's like unhumane. Like, really,
that's
really aggressive. Like, to tell someone that they have to leave somewhere that they've been living for what thousands of years.
There's a whole conversation that I would love to open up on this program, and I'm waiting for the right combination of guests, really, because
right.
The debate's been going on for a long time for more people than just you or me or them.
Right.
And you know, as I'm reading this here,
right,
and I've also got a reading later from Native Americans talking
right.
about their spirituality and religion.
Right.
And it's Both of these are tackling that issue,
right?
About moving around.
The American Indians as well were done wrong as well. Like not too long ago, really. You know, if we think about it,
too long ago. But things are turning around a bit.
They are. Oh gosh, I can't say. I mean, yeah. If they start going green, let's not beat around the bush, like, you know, using solar power and doing other things instead of using like fuels like that they use, like gasoline. Mm-hmm. And you know, we got all these other technologies, and some places are putting it to use. Like I know in Europe, if I remember right, I know they're running like electric cars and whatnot over there, and that's great.
Yeah.
And they also, right here in our hometown in San Rafael, I've seen plug-ins for electric cars.
They're adapting. Things are going greener a little bit. And again, you know, without getting
good.
Into the politics of it, it's nice to see it working.
Yes.
And it's really nice to see that this is working because people are motivated to get up and make a change.
Right.
And this is where it really starts, is with you, with me, and with all of us.
Right.
To recognize where we can improve
right.
and to take action.
Right.
And you've taken a lot of action yourself. Before we get into that, I want to talk about you and our community here.
Sure.
You've been living in San Rafael for a while. About how many years have you been
I've
in town?
I've been in San Rafael, on the streets for about 3 years, or a little over 3 years, but I originally lived in Fairfax, which is up the way. But most of my time that I've had here in San Rafael has been on the streets. And before that, it was me maybe just passing through to go to work, because I used to work at Dharma Trading. Can I say that?
Yeah,
I could say that.
It's
Dharma
a local
Trading.
Business,
hello,
yeah.
Isaac. I love you, dude. And Chris. If they ever heard this, I doubt it. But anyway, but yeah, San Rafael's great. Like, again, like, I do love this town, and I have nothing bad to say about it. The people are great here. If you hear anybody saying that San Rafael is bad, they definitely don't know San Rafael, that's for sure, because I've seen a lot of love here, like a lot of miracles, and I've also seen people lose their lives too on the street here as
it's a community like any other. And
sure.
The point of this show, Thursday Night Mission, here every 9 to 10 p.m. on Dominican Radio, is to focus on people like you and the community around us and what we're doing, that we're living and breathing. Now, Marin, in many ways,
right,
is a place where people can come together from around the world.
Right. Marin's beautiful.
It is.
In
other ways,
let it be known forever. Yeah,
we're just a backwaters. We happen to be right next to San Francisco.
until this technology like melts or something. Yeah, Marin is beautiful. Like, I've been to the East Coast, North, South, all over the place, and I've yet to see anywhere like our lovely backyard here in California, Northern California to be specific, like Humboldt County, Riodale, Trinidad, Trinity County, you know, Weed County, anywhere up north, like, is beautiful from, like, to me, Big Sur up, like, but
Northern California is
Northern
gorgeous.
California,
Southern,
yes.
California's got its appeals as well.
I like Southern California, like, I don't know, it's like, Southern California is different, but I love Southern California as well, but I'm more of a NorCal person.
As he says, looking at me, we're a
Northern California person.
With the bear on it.
But love to SoCal, though, like, you know, SoCal's got a lot of cool things going on, like, the Southern California is beautiful, San Diego, L.A., Long Beach, all those places.
Speaking
are lovely.
Of all these areas of California, now,
Venice.
Aside from just traveling and living around, you've also have done a lot of political activism here in California.
Yes, I have. I've done most of my actions in Humboldt County, which is a long story, but I know you only got me on here for about an hour. Like, I could.
Well, let's talk about who did you work with?
My group of people, the organization, if you will, was North Coast Earth First that I got involved with. When I first started Tree Sit, and I started up in the Sierra Nevadas, right outside of Nevada City, and that was about 1998, I think it was, 99, it could have been 97 going into 98, and that's when I got involved. But really what got me involved in tree sitting is it started right out of a Rolling Stone magazine. Yes, folks, a Rolling Stone magazine.
Really?
I was looking at Julia Butterfly.
Okay.
And it showed a picture of her in Luna. And she inspired me. I was like, wow, like this sister's like, you know, she's a warrioress, like she's a lioness, if you will. It was very inspiring to see that it was a female doing it. It was like,
yeah.
Wow, it's not a dude or whatever, you know? Like, anyway, so that inspired me, and I was in a different place, a different time, and I had to take myself out of a different place and go to a different time, which was up north in Humboldt County. And how it all began is from the Sierras. I did a tree sit there that was very brief and short, like, the trees got hacked. It was right by Bowman Lake, right next to a little town of Washington. It's right off Highway 20 going towards Reno before you hit the 80 off Highway 20. That was my first sit. That lasted about a couple weeks. My friend Molly, wherever you are, love, miss you so much, sister. She rised up first, and she climbed up the tree is what I mean by rised up. And she sat, and then she couldn't hang, and I was there as a substitute, like, if if she felt like uncomfortable, then I would climb up the tree and go finish off the sit. All we were trying to do was make a statement like that this is wrong to be cutting old growth. They were cutting old growth Doug firs up there.
This would be a good time to talk about what exactly tree sitting is and what it means. I mean, it's pretty obviously you're climbing up into a tree.
Yes.
And you're sitting there, and mm-hmm. it's not like babysitting. You're actually there for a reason. You're putting your body up there for a reason.
Yes. The whole purpose is, my whole purpose was to make a voice for something that didn't have a voice. But redwoods do have a voice, but that's another story. They're more than just trees, folks, which some people probably know. There's lots of redwood people, and they know who they are. Anyway,
you'd mentioned North Coast Earth First, and did you also mention Redwood Curtain?
Redwood Curtain is another group of people, I think, which I had nothing to do with them. We were a total different organization. I don't want to say, like, I think they're like a, like, kind of maybe like Sierra Club or
you had
and whatnot.
Told me to go search them online to get good ideas as far as images and activism.
Sure.
They had
yes.
a good site.
Yes.
And you gave me another site too.
Yes, it should have been
WeSaveTrees.org.
That's right.
I'll get these links up on the blog later tonight.
Sure.
For anybody that's interested in learning a little bit more about that network of people.
These websites too, like, are the WeSaveTrees.org is like slideshows and slide pictures, excuse me, and movie clips of extractions of tree sitters being took out of trees and whatnot when the
so it's kind of the hot stuff that happens filmed, and that's the voice you were talking about, is getting awareness out there,
right?
And so anybody that goes and searches for some of this tree sitting activism will see the dramatic parts,
right? They'll see.
We'll talk more in the second half of the hour about
sure.
what life's actually like up there. Right now I want to remind folks that you're listening to Penguin Radio Thursday Night Mission. I'm your host Beacon. We're here with guest Chris.
Greetings.
Local resident and activist. We've been talking about tree sitting. You can listen to this show live. Of course, if you hear my voice, you are at radio.dominican.edu. There are a lot of other great student programmings. Go to that website, click through the portal. You'll find the DJ menu and buttons to listen live through your computer. Down at the bottom, through mobile, you can also hear any of these shows broadcast through podcast. They're saved there for your listening on demand. If you find the link on there that says listen to these on demand, click on it and you will find Thursday Night Mission shows as well as other students and sportscasts.
Click, 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 click.
Support
click
for this broadcast is up on Blogger. Blogspot is the part of the address. Type in thursdaynightmission.blogspot.com. That site will feature an article about Chris, what we're doing tonight, and anything that you hear here that makes you say, hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
There are links there for you to learn more about, and I encourage anybody hearing my voice tonight to check out the Blogspot and get involved in your community, if not through my links, then through others. So we're talking about tree sitting, and how long altogether, Chris, had you said you've worked doing tree sitting? How many years?
About 13, 14 years. 98 till, I guess my last sit was in 2000, what was it? 10. October was my last sit, and that was in Cutton, which is right outside, southern of, south of Eureka. Or actually, it might as well be Eureka. It's just another little part right there in Humboldt County. That was my last tree sit, and that was in Cutton, and we sat there for 27 days.
So, meaning 14 years, it doesn't mean you've been in the same tree for 14
years.
No,
no, no.
You've been involved for 14 years.
I've been involved with North Coast Earth First for over a decade, yes. About 14 years. And, yeah, I sat in many, 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 many various different trees in different areas.
If you were to add up all of your life that you've sacrificed the ground for the lofty heights to make a statement, how many months, how many years do you think you've actually had in tree?
That probably about four, probably over 4 years. Definitely. Definitely over 4 years.
That's a lot of time.
That's over
there.
4 years. And I'm not no Julia Butterfly either. Like, she gets all the love. Like, that sister, she was another major foundation, even though we're talking about me. But if it wasn't for her, like, a lot of this stuff wouldn't have been shown around the world and whatnot. Or networking. She did a lot of networking.
To get the message out.
Okay. And talking to people on TV and using the, how do I say it? You know, using resources like radio.
Multimedia resources.
Media,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Using media.
Now, but this media doesn't mean anything if nothing's going on. You were sitting in the trees for a reason. Do you want to talk a little bit about why you're sitting up there to save them? What was the threat to them?
The threat was... literally, the threat is a saw cutting old growth redwood, which is literally, to me, murder. To a bunch of us was murder. The whole thing the whole thing about protesting for them was to end old growth logging. And some people didn't know that they were old growth logging because no one's really, you know, paying attention to logging anyway. Like,
it's out there in the wilderness.
Yeah, it's like out in the middle of nowhere. You're out in these desolate areas, like, you know, yeah, you're like out in the middle of nowhere. It was trippy. I'm thinking of times when I was living in the trees. But yeah, our whole thing was to end old growth logging, anything that was old growth. Select cut would have been nice instead of clear cutting. Select cut, what I mean by select cutting is like they have a marker, a dude that goes in with blue paint and marks the bases of the trees, and they select certain trees and they walk past the old growth and whatnot, and they spare the old growth trees, but they weren't doing that. Like, I watched them for about 10 years in Humboldt. Like, they hacked pretty much all the old growth they had on their private property, which was Pacific Lumber during the time.
Okay. And now, how do you determine old growth? What age would one of these trees have to be to fall into that condition?
What I heard, what I've heard is that 200 years old is supposed to be the age limit for considering old growth and
whatnot. So 200 and older?
200 years old is considered old growth. Like, and super old growth, like titans and whatnot, like, are like in between from 2,500, from, you know, 1,000 to like up to 4,500 years old.
Amazing.
And yes, it is amazing.
Amazing a being can live that long.
It's amazing, yes. And it's like, some people are like, what? Like, yes, so that these trees actually get that old. Like, and what's even weirder is the last time that I was up there, through people that were doing research and stuff, were saying that maybe even that the roots, they were thinking that the roots could be older than the redwoods themselves. Like,
oh, from the other term for old growth, which means if something's been cut and it grows back up,
right? It'll grow. Yeah. They'll sprout out. And if anyone's ever seen a old growth redwood stump, you'll notice that they resprout. Like, they're strong, but once they're cut though, then it takes it, you know, hundreds of years for it to get back to the natural beauty state that it was before it was took down.
We're just, really, our lives are just a flash in the pan compared to their existence.
Yeah, some of these trees were around when good old Jesus was cruising around, if you will, like on the earth. Like, yeah, they're very old beings and whatnot, like entities or whatever you want to call them.
They serve a lot of uses in the forest. Old growth woods itself has its own environment, which can't be recreated. I know this from my own experiences with land management.
Right.
And there's other beings that rely on this. Say animals. You had mentioned the spotted owl to me.
Spotted owl. There's the
some endangered species that rely on these redwoods.
Right. The horned owl. Spotted owl was one of the main focuses because they require old growth to live in. Excuse me. And the reason why is because what happens in the old growth is it'll do a snag, which means it's like dead, and it gives them space to land because they're huge. You know, a spotted owl is pretty big. Like it can't land in a green part of the tree. Like, so they need a old growth to live in. Like, they gotta have it. Like, and then there's the marble murrelet that comes in from the Pacific, that comes in for just a short time, like to live in these trees, and then they go back out and they live out in the Pacific Ocean and whatnot. They come to the redwoods, and we really don't know why they go there, take a break or whatever, but most of the time they're out in the Pacific. They're another amazing animal, if you will, bird that takes I didn't want to say that, occupy. I didn't want, yeah, you know, well, you they know, they live in these things.
If
like,
the birds were able to do, hold an occupy movement of their own, actually, they might actually be doing it. We just don't know it because we're not listening.
They've been occupying.
It's their home.
That's right. It's their like, home. So what happens if these certain animals don't have these trees and whatnot? Then they don't really have a home. It would be like you going home and the wrecking ball, you were watching a wrecking ball wreck your house or something, you know, and you can't do anything about it. That's like how the animals feel. And there's reactions in the birds and stuff when chainsaws and whatnot would start early in the morning. You know, the whole animal life in the forest would, they'd be like, they'd start talking, you know, they knew, like, they're very aware of the destruction anyways.
Another bird's going homeless so that another human can have a home.
Right. Mm. You know, I've actually heard up in Oregon that there's places where it's actually not even funny, man, where you could go into the woods or out into the wilderness and you won't even hear birds because there's no trees.
Wow.
Like, for birds to land in.
Well, these Californias... redwoods are they're a part of our land. In fact, we've got one of the sequoia species is our state tree.
Yes.
And featured in our state parks.
Yeah.
I believe that's the giant sequoia.
Yes, down south. Two different trees. Mm-hmm. Like some people.
There's a few species of sequoia here.
Right.
And there are still a lot of redwoods, but not like there was.
Right.
Not like there was last century. And they are still dwindling. Without getting heavily into environmental concerns.
Right.
I want to start talking the next part of the hour about what life was like in a tree.
No problem.
Do we do our calendar segment here? I'm Beacon. Thank you for listening to Thursday Night Mission. My guest tonight is Chris, an avid tree sitter and with some serious ardor for the arboreal. He's lived up there for some time. We're going to talk about what it's like actually doing that, the nitty gritty of it, in a bit. Thank you for listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. And it's time for calendar. I'm going to do Facebook calendar tonight. Of course, you're listening to Thursday Night Mission. There is an event listed. If you are in my network, you have been invited to Thursday Night Mission. If not, you can search in that white bar in the blue top menu part, Thursday Night Mission. And you'll see the event there as well as links to the blog and websites. Again, Blogger is supporting this broadcast at thursdaynightmission.blogspot.com. So stop by, check it out. Feel free to comment. Say hi for any of the shout-outs if you heard Chris shouting out to you. And find all sorts of links and resources on the Treasure Trove page that supports that.
That's a lot of people.
Now, coming up at George's Nightclub. This is practically right down the street from us here on 4th Street.
Yes, it is.
San Rafael. Saturday, 9 p.m. till 12 a.m. There's going to be a show that's going to rock that brick house. It is Wild Child, a live recreation of the 1960s Doors concert.
Oh, no.
Now, who's with this is our own Stephanie Keys here. So they'll be at the George's Nightclub Saturday, 9 to 12. I don't see cover information on that, but I believe there's a cover charge for most George's events. Also, on Sunday at 3 p.m., Essence is at the Starry Plow. This is not a Marin venue. Actually, this is over in Berkeley at 3101 Shattuck Avenue. Another Facebook event. Check out the Starry Plow. Essence will be there. We also have Musique. This is a reoccurring weekly hip-hop, old-school, new funk, modern soul, and future classic music to dance to with resident DJs Self Diggy and Frankie Fresh. This is every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. 21 plus, no cover. And this is in collaboration with the Nickel Rose Lounge, which is right downtown here in San Rafael. We also have Thursday, next Thursday, before my broadcast from and running through it from 7 to 10 p.m. is an Occupy the Screen public event at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco. It's hosting a film and panel discussion. So you can listen to Thursday Night Mission on your way back from there, or you can go check it out and let me know how it went, since I'll be broadcasting for you, as I do every week, 9 to 10 p.m. here on Penguin Radio. All right. Now that we've done our calendar segment, I wanted to talk with you a little bit more about life in the trees.
I was reading. What does that say up there, bro?
Ah, yeah.
I got bad eyes.
We're going to avoid the words you oughtn't say, is how it's
blah, 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 right? Like, whatever.
None of them are the seven deadly words.
So I haven't said that yet, right?
Everybody says,
But,
I'll give you a copy of the broadcast.
I'm shaking over here. No. Sorry, bro.
You'll be able to review it.
Thank you for having me here, man.
Yeah, we should have your broadcast uploaded.
When are we going to interview you?
You know, I've been interviewing myself for a while. It's getting me on both microphones I've been having trouble with.
Well, San Rafael Chanel, great you are. Just throwing that out there because you are a great person,
Thank you. Welcome. Since we're throwing that out there, I want to also thank you for the time that you've done working volunteer in many of the projects here for the Interfaith Street Chaplaincy and for the Summer Suppers.
Yes.
I know you've enjoyed the open mics as well.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So,
yep. I've got a couple.
Paul Gaffney, love you out there. Yeah. Jay, and there's so many of them out there. Bob King. I don't know if I can be doing this stuff, but yeah, there's a lot of people out there.
Some great people in this
Suzanne.
I'm plugging to get her on.
That'd be so cool. Yeah. Connie.
I want to talk about the REST program.
Right.
And we've got some guests coming up. Paul's coming up on here. Next week, we've got Coyote. And Nikhil will be talking to us about health and energy and wellness.
That's going
to
be good.
Yeah, it should be a pretty good show. And that will be life on the acupuncture side. Yeah. Here, we've got life on the tree side. Now, I always enjoyed climbing trees when I was a kid. But this is amateur stuff, right? I mean, what was I going, 20 feet up? Well, oh my God, look, Mom, I'm 50 feet in the air. No, don't tell 20, Mom. She'll tell me feet, to come back down.
I think we actually said like 25 feet is fatal. Like, if you, for some reason, if you fall, like, your head always ends up going head first. For some reason, physics work like that. Yeah, we always said 25 feet. If you fall out 25 feet and you land the wrong way, yeah, you can die.
So climbing up in these trees is a professional thing. You're using gear.
Yeah, we're using top quality climbing gear. Yes, many different kinds of brands. Most of our stuff got donated to us. Black Diamond, Patagonia, REI, North Face. Many people, Petzl. We got like different names of equipments and whatnot that we used. Yeah, we used the best equipment that we could. You had to, because your life is literally on the line.
Literally on the line. And every second.
Every second, yeah. And the best thing, that what made me feel secure, is that I would do my own knots. And if my someone experienced, like, that was my main thing, was like when I would climb into a tree that I didn't do the knots in, I would be like, who set up all these traverses and who did this and anchored that? And sometimes I could just look at the knots and know who did it. But yeah, if it was not done right, it had to be reset up, or actually that would never happen, because if it was done wrong, people would die.
Yeah.
But we were on it. As a matter of fact, the person that taught me was a very dear friend named LP Lodgepole, and he taught me how to climb and brought me into the redwood canopy, if you will.
Okay, so having climbing training obviously is essential for doing this. You'd essentially be climbing anything you did while tree sitting.
Yes.
At what heights? I mean, what altitudes are we talking about?
Heights could average out from 280 to 370, which is 370 plus. And that was a tree that wasn't threatened that I was in. That was a tree where I went to go take a break and go and climb in to look at, which was, it was the Founders Grove tree.
Oh, my God. Wow. So even when you're taking a vacation, you're in a tree.
Yeah. I said I wanted to climb the highest redwood, and my buddy was like, well, it's Founders Grove. So we did one night. We went in there and we set up ropes, and I stayed there for a week. And people were going down below us in the park. Dang it, is this illegal to talk about? Oh my gosh. Nobody knew we were there, you know. I'd be sleeping in the day, but it's a park up there, a redwood park, Founders Grove, which is supposedly one of the tallest redwoods on the coast that they know of, which before that was a Dyerville giant, but she laid out, like, I think it was in the late 90s that she fell down. Naturally, she fell down through a storm, because they get really, really gnarly storms up there.
So you're up there at 200 plus feet, pretty much.
Yes.
Yep. And
easily.
You're not. There's no shelter there. The wind, the rain, everything is coming through you. The sun, and you're staying up there for days at a time, weeks,
even months.
So how do you do it? I mean, you can't just cling to a stick and hope.
Well, what I would do if what you mean by like occupying time is the first time when I climbed up in a redwood, I learned real quick. I sat on my platform for about a month because I was I was climbing Doug firs before I went into redwoods.
Okay.
And there's a major difference in height and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I was scared, and I noticed that my joints got all cramped. So immediately I was like, you got to move around. Like, so I started getting my exercise by climbing around in the trees and traversing and whatnot into other trees. Traverse line, like, which is two lines that you go from one tree to another, which I'm sure everybody probably knows what a traverse line is, but...
Oh, you know, I'd smile and nod, but not really, not if you hadn't just said that.
That's how I got exercise, and of course, a lot of spiritual, like meditation, if you will. I don't even want to say meditation. Just like, it was like another world, really, to tell you the truth. After a couple months in my first sit, it was very spiritual. It taught me a lot of things. It taught me how to be organized. Because you're living on a 4x8 sheet of plywood with, you know, little 2x4 slats.
And so this has been rigged with ropes up into the branches.
Yes, it's rigged with trucker's rope. And kids, don't do this at home. But it's rigged up with trucker's rope and water line. It's like a flat line that we used for the anchoring with a big heavy steel beaner. And then we would hang all the loops on.
So
onto that, and it would hold and suspend the platform.
This is kind of like camping.
It's kind of like camping. It's better than camping, actually.
But you're not
it's
just sitting
illegal
there.
Camping.
Well, you know, political activism is going. It is going to be crossing legal boundaries depending on the situation.
Yes,
but you know, how do you actually survive up there? Did you have any sort of shelter?
Of course, I did. Nothing like solid, like building structures or anything. We would use such things as parachute cord and tarp. Like the parachute cord, I would use as framing. Like I would weave up a bunch of parachute cord, mm-hmm. and then wrap the tarp around that, and it would make a structure with the tarp.
So it would survive the winds.
So you could survive the winds. Actually, the winds would be sometimes strong enough to like lift your platform if you didn't have it like wrapped around the base where the bottom of the platform meets the trunk. There was another line that we would drill two holes in there, and then we would wrap another line around and then put knots on it, and it would hold the platform snug against a tree. If you didn't have that and it came winter time when they get winds up there, then you were going to get blown around, like, for sure. I actually experienced it one time.
Now, I know you've got a safety line all
yes,
at all times.
They,
but you
they,
know, you're harnessed up. You're just sleeping in your harness, right?
Well, There was times where I went without sleeping with a harness, and I would walk around comfortably because I had been living in the tree for months that I was comfortable enough. It was like if you were getting up, walking around in, to go into your kitchen and whatnot, knew every branch, I knew had a route. I went up the same way, came down the same way, barefooted and whatnot.
How long did it take you to lose your fear up there, though, once you're up?
Poseidon was the name of the tree that taught me how to overcome the fear of being in the tippy whippy of a redwood. It took over a month, Grant, probably, bro. It took a long time, I remember. And when I first climbed up into this redwood named Poseidon that was in freshwater right in between Arcata and Eureka, my buddy Lodgepole and the dude, they had little poles is what we call them. We call them pecker poles, if you will, all laid out like a frame. And I had to sit on a piece of wood that was a little bigger than the top of a shoebox lid. And I was already up probably about 180 feet. And I remember they knew that I had previously tree-sitted in the Sierra Nevadas, but not in so high in a redwood like that, because the redwoods are pretty dang tall.
Yeah.
They're taller than any Doug fir that I climbed out, for sure. It took a while, bro. It took a while to get used to. There was many nights, too, after, you know, a few years into my few seasons into it, that I would worry during storms. There was always times where I thought that, you know, I could die tonight.
Because the danger never stops.
No, it doesn't.
Not when you're washing your hands, not when you're preparing your meals.
No.
Now, how would you get food up there? If you're actually going to stay up there and sit up in there as a statement, you can't just be hopping up and down the tree.
No, you can't. The whole thing is when you climb up the tree, you're there to occupy, for one. And how we got food there is they had a cool little thing set up with the co-op there in Arcata. And if you're in Arcata, please go to the co-op now and buy yourself some veggies and whatnot. They would table there, and they would give people knowledge on what was happening, or educate people, if you will, on what was happening. And then there would be a list of things that we would need, and people would read the list and be like, okay, well, I can buy some salad, and I can buy some tomato, and I could buy some rope.
So it's a group effort. Nobody can just go up into a tree, make a statement, and just be there.
No.
Aside from just getting the voice out, I mean.
Right.
It requires a team of dedicated individuals.
It takes a
to keep
lot
a tree sat in.
Of individuals, which I just struck me right now. Yeah, it takes a lot of people to have a tree sit to exist and to be continuously going, because you got to have food. And you got to have food, like when you're living in a tree.
One other thing, which we just have to mention, because it's
not the one, right?
It's the one thing.
It is
the one. We'll try to be sanitary about it.
We will.
But it is about sanitation. I mean,
yes,
the food comes up and it goes somewhere sooner or later.
Well, what happens?
How would you deal with waste up there?
This is what we would do. The food I would lower down, like say it was my sleeping bag, like stuff sack, if any kind of bag, I'd lower that down, I clip it on a line. They would yell up at me, they'd be all, "Sky, lower your line." I'd lower my line, they'd clip my stuff on, I'd haul it up, then I would sort through it, the produce, and we would have 5-gallon buckets up in the trees, you know.
Okay.
And then we
like
would
the
put
paint buckets,
right? Exactly. And we would put fruit with fruit and oats with oats. Usually it was a lot of vegetables and bread and hummus and things that you could make like with instant hot water.
Okay.
Because we also would, some tree sits would have stoves and some wouldn't, but
whatever they could scramble up, yeah.
Whatever you could bring up, yeah.
So, and for other necessities, getting up in the middle of the night, you just hang yourself off a limb, or you have a bucket?
Well, we would use milk jugs or various jugs. They'd have to be big. As an idea, a milk jug. And for a female, what we would do is they would use themselves a funnel.
Okay.
Because they had it the hardest to you know, yeah.
Yeah, to relieve themselves.
Yeah, girls are, like, to put it out there, actually, the best sitters I've ever seen were female.
Mm-hmm.
The strongest, like, and some dedicated, like, and very agile in the branches. A few sisters that I remember, Mystique and Rain and Ren and Remedy. There's a many of them. Julia now, Butterfly.
These are all your sitting names. Like you had mentioned Sky earlier.
Yeah, these are all
your tree name.
Those are we would use different names because I didn't want anybody like, hey Chris, or some. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we did. We used forest names, and my name was Sky, SKY.
So Sky, you've told me a few stories, which is what really seeded this whole show in my mind. And we've talked about this before, obviously.
Yes.
You know,
yes, we have.
It's easy for us to talk about it, and you've got so much information I'm trying to get out of you in the short time we've got left. You had one story which really intrigued me that I thought audience would be really interested in hearing what some of the consequences could be when the action got hot. You talked to me about a girdling incident when you were up in the tree. Would you tell that story for us?
Sure, I could tell you. I guess it was probably like 2003, 2004. It was one of the biggest extractions that had ever been done. And again, this was one of the biggest tree sits that had ever been done, Tree Sit Village. We had 28 trees that we occupied, and in between those 28 trees was a mile-long traverse line that went to other mini trees that we would climb through to get to other trees. But I went blank there.
You were talking about one time you were up in there. Now, the extraction, okay. When you mention extracting, you're talking about them actually trying to get you out of the
trees.
Yeah,
they will,
like,
they will come up.
Do they send police up there?
Well, what they were doing is they were deputizing the arborists before they came up into the trees, which we thought was a no-no.
The arborists from the logging company.
Well, they were arborists from different places, various places, from Canada, Oregon, like people that climbed big old growth trees and stuff. Like, you see these guys.
They're selecting them for the climbing ability.
Oh, yeah, these guys climb trees. They don't use booms and stuff like certain people you mm-hmm. see in the neighborhoods cutting trees. These guys actually girth and climb trees with ropes, like, and they were very good.
And so what do? They come up there, tell you you're under arrest, go
there,
down? I mean, do they hand you a
and
citation?
Actually, you could go to YouTube and you can actually look up extractions that were done in freshwater, and you can actually see some of these extractions on wesavetrees.org. There's videos there. There's little windows that you could click on. It'll say videos. You could do donations and whatnot and get involved if you want to, if there's anything active. But since 2008 and whatnot, the old growth logging has actually slowed down up there. But yeah, there's videos of extractions, and extractions were very dangerous. And the good thing that happened, actually, when they were doing these raids in 2003, when I was in this tree that you're talking, that I forgot what I was talking about earlier. I got mm-hmm. brain jammed there for a minute. They actually put cameras on their heads and came up, and they filmed one of the most violinous extractions that was probably to ever be recorded on film. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure is definitely one
right,
of the most
which
violent.
Which is probably some of the only footage that actually leaked to mainstream news media.
Yeah.
Because of the drama content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what generally
a more peaceful thing, though.
An extraction? No.
No. So they're getting you out of those trees any way they can.
Well, what this if now the whole tactic was to, if a climber did come in your tree, you're supposed to go out on traverse, and
okay.
some people wouldn't. There was two different ways that you could protect a tree. You could either put your arms in a lockbox, which was something that was put in the tip of a tree that you would put your hands in, and they would have to cut it with a grinder. Now the whole thing about this was like, they're not going to use a grinder because the chances they can cut our wrists off. But they went on ahead and they did cut through lock boxes, and they figured out how we were making our lock boxes.
So that's the point right there. When you're actually putting your own life on the line
right.
for this tree.
Right.
When they're messing around with tactics like this, you're trying not to get extracted.
Right.
They're trying to extract because
right.
it's not just a matter of following safety procedures. There's action going on.
While they'll come up there, and that is one of the things they will say. They're like, we're concerned over your safety.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I would be like, I'm safe.
Right.
I'm clipped in right here. I got a lobster claw in on this branch. I'm safe, and I'm about to start clipping into this line, because when you got two people in a tree, you got to have communication when you start moving around, because if you don't and you drop something or you drop a beaner or a repelling device right. down.
Both of you are there to do your job,
yeah.
but you can't unnecessarily endanger each other.
No. So what on my first experience, what happened is I started telling the climber when the climber was coming up on my first experience of a climber trying to take me out of a tree, and they weren't ever successful on getting me out of a tree. I was one of the only ones that didn't get took out of a tree. I made total communication with them, and that's what they always said. We're here for your safety. And, you know, of course I would start clipping in my gear onto the main line and start climbing, because you want to get as far distance as you can away from them, pretty much arm's length, if not your whole body length. Basically go out on traverse, because once you're out on the traverse line, they have to throw a line over you. And what happens then is when they start shooting lines over, they'll use crossbows, shot bags, all these different kinds of techniques. The line sags, and you pull on the line, and it swings back out over to where they can't ever set a traverse above you.
God, that's tactics within tactics.
Yeah, you got to be like thinking. And they get mad when you start tampering and touching somebody else's gear when you're like... when you're up very high in the air, you know, a couple hundred feet is what, to be specific, sometimes even higher than that, no more than 300 though. Like,
wow. Now that, besides just the drama and the political and personal drama, that's cliffhanger material right there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, was, for sure.
It was definitely gnarly stuff. The longest time I sat on a traverse line was like, I think it was like 14 hours.
Wow.
And they were trying to extract this out and whatnot, but, and it was very uncomfortable sitting in a harness for like that long, like in space is what we called it. 'Cause you have nothing below you besides like the tippy whippy of trees.
Man, you know, I want to thank you for putting that out. Even if I didn't believe in saving our old growth forests, which I do, I happen to share that sentiment with you. Even without that, I have to thank you for dedicating your time, hours, days, weeks, months, and even years overall.
Thank you.
To this cause, and to doing it for them, and to doing it for all of us as well as a society, so that we have this precious resource for something other than just furniture.
Could I say one thing?
Yeah.
My main focus too was to have these trees around for younger youth. That was one thing that I should have said a long time ago. My main focus was definitely for young kids to enjoy these trees for future generations to come.
And the spotted owls kind of got
going
on too.
Well, my biggest fear was like, could you imagine a kid going to a museum and looking at a fiberglass trunk of a redwood instead of looking at a real old growth?
Or a photograph or something.
Yeah. You
know, as so many species have done in the last century.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming and
thank you.
And telling me about your time here. I'm Beacon, your host on Thursday Night Mission. We've been talking with Chris, whose tree name is Sky. Has lived right up there at the treetops, sitting for to protest logging practices and protect old growth trees, including our redwoods here in California. Listen to Thursday Night Mission every 9 to 10 p.m. here on radio.dominican.edu, and listen to podcasts of this and other broadcasts online at that site. It's getting a little wet out there again. I'm going to have to send you all back out into the stormy airwaves in a couple of minutes. I wanted to wrap up with another reading, tie us up with something else from our book, The Indian Spirit. This is a passage that I'm going to read. It's from Ghost Dancers at Wounded Knee in South Dakota. Now, the site that this comes from, Wounded Knee, is the place of the infamous Sioux Massacre in 1890. and the ghost dancers there, I believe, they still gather for ceremony there.
I think they actually, can I say that? That was a very sacred ceremony, that the ghost dance. I remember seeing pictures when I was a kid. My grandma had pictures and books and whatnot when they were able, allowed once to, they actually let them take photos. I think they snuck and took the photos. I can't remember really.
It's a very sacred thing.
Yeah.
And they do protect it. Maybe rightly so, but I think that's a topic for another discussion.
Right.
So let me read this to you here from the Ghost Dancers. I think you'll appreciate this reading with all the things that we've talked about here.
Yes.
Mother Nature is all-powerful, and eternity is on her side. What are the inventions of man? The lofty cities which he raises on the borders of the desert? The terrible weapons that he uses to realize and defend his conquests? Nothing. Nothing but a little heaped-up dust, which the great natural forces always tend to restore to its primeval form. Forsake the citadel for a few years. Abandon the canyon or machine gun for a few months on the prairie, and soon grass and brambles will have overgrown the stones, and the rust will have corroded the hard steel. In how many former times have vast solitudes been peopled by powerful cities? Of them today remain no more than the ruins, and the ruins themselves finally disappear back into the eternally virgin earth. Of what importance are these men that pass? The spirit has only to blow on them, and they will be no more. Then the sons of the earth will repossess the earth, and the pastime will begin over again as the new time.
Beautiful.
Well, I'm going to wrap things up here. Thank you for listening to Thursday Night Mission. It's always a pleasure to broadcast you to you here from Penguin Radio in San Rafael, California. Nice, dry, solid shores here. I'm going to have to send you back out into the storm in a minute. Always come and listen to Thursday Night Mission. Every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. or maybe just a few minutes later. So for now, this is Beacon and Chris.
Bye-bye.
Saying goodnight.